It's your city. It's our job. District Council 37 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees presents It's Your City. It's Our Job, a program highlighting the work of the 125,000 men and women of DC 37, members of 56 local unions. You'll find DC 37 members everywhere. We're the largest municipal employees union in the city. We're everything from accountants to zookeepers. We are blue-collar, white-collar, technical, and professional. We are District Council 37, working with and for the people of New York City.
Welcome to the radio program of District Council 37. I'm Ken Nash. This is part one of our celebration of the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, a union whose fighting spirit has inspired workers since their founding in 1905. Charlie King and Karen Brando are musical storytellers whose repertoire covers a century and a half and four continents. In this concert held at the Catholic Workers' House in New York City recently, they continue their new format of songs with storytelling, producing a stirring and insightful history of the IWW in words and song. And now dump the bosses off your back, 100 years of the Industrial Workers of the World with Charlie King and Karen Brandow.
With the IWW, Catholic workers shared the goal of building a new society within the shell of the old. This year is the centennial of the IWW, and their example is especially valuable, you know, as we see the American Federation of Labor once again splitting over their inability to enthusiastically organize the working poor, especially immigrant poor. There's no better example of that than the IWW, as you'll see from this program, which I think pretty much speaks and sings for itself. We have very high expectations that you will sing on these songs, because that's what they were written for.
The Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, or as they laughingly called themselves, the Wobblies. Never before or since has there been such an organization. Its members were always on the go, from job to job, from state to state, hopping freights, riding the rods to anywhere and everywhere. The Wobblies probably never had more than 60,000 active members at any one time, but they influenced millions, forever talking of solidarity, forever declaring that the working class, those who did the nation's work, should own the nation's industries.
The IWW emerged at the beginning of the 20th century and challenged the American Federation of Labor. For 20 years, the AF-L, under the leadership of Samuel Gompers, had used the medieval model of the guild or craft union to organize skilled workers, carpenters, plumbers, painters, printers, tailors, glassblowers, and cigar makers, into hierarchies of apprentice, journeyman, and master. The IWW organized workers that the AFL considered unorganizable or undesirable: immigrants, people of color, migratory workers in agriculture, lumber, and construction, the unskilled. They rejected craft unionism for its obvious failure to adapt to changing industrial conditions. When workers of one AFL union went on strike, members of dozens of other AFL unions in the same plant routinely crossed the picket line and remained on the job, bound by the contracts their own craft union had negotiated with the plant owners. The IWW believed they could end these divisions with one big union.
Wobblies were militant hellraisers. They created stories, plays, and cartoon characters to get their message across. They had hundreds of songs which served them well, whether walking picket lines or sitting around campfires in the hobo jungles that followed the railroad tracks west. And they gave us the song that is known all around the world as the anthem of international labor unity.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
At 10 a.m. on June 27, 1905, William D. Haywood walked to the front of Brand's Hall in Chicago, picked up a piece of loose board and hammered on the table to silence the whispers in the crowded room. Fellow workers, this is the Continental Congress of the working class. We are here to confederate the workers of this country into a working class movement in possession of the economic powers, the means of life, in control of the machinery of production and distribution without regard to capitalist masters.
Big Bill Haywood, a massive, stoop-shouldered man, had been a cowboy, a homesteader, and a miner. Blinded in one eye in a mine accident, Big Bill left the Silver City, Utah mines at the turn of the century to become an organizer for the Western Federation of Miners and the Socialist Party.
I do not care a snap of my fingers whether or not the skilled workers join the industrial movement at this time. We're going to go down into the gutter to get at the mass of workers and bring them up to a decent plane of living.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Forever, for the union makes us strong.
The Industrial Workers of the World was committed to equality for women workers from its very inception. Shortly after its founding, the IWW would draw brilliant female organizers to its standard, the most notable being Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. She joined in 1906 at age 16.
Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. I really should tell you something about where the IWW stood in relation to other organizations, because the picture is probably not too clear. Well, it was an industrial union, and it was opposed to the American Federation of Labor, bitterly so. It did not stand for any of the things that the AFL stood for: fair day's wage for a fair day's work, a brotherhood of capital and labor. None of those things. It was strong for fighting the boss every time we got a chance.
By organizing industrially, said the preamble to the IWW Constitution, we are forming the structure of the new society within the shell of the old. From the start, the IWW refused to sign contracts with employers. They scorned pensions, insurance, and death benefits as pitiful concessions to a decaying social order. In speaking about the IWW, the key words are always freedom, solidarity, democracy, direct action, revolution, rank and file control, humor, imagination, and an injury to one is an injury to all. With high enthusiasm and low dues, the IWW set about its work and accomplished marvels.
Is there aught we hold in common with the greedy parasite who would lash us into serfdom and would crush us with his might? Is there any choice left to us but to organize and fight when the union makes us strong? Forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
The IWW believed that job control was the speediest route to the new society. The idea of capturing power at the ballot box was not particularly attractive to them. Most workers were barred from the polls. All women, all workers under 21, all foreign-born workers not yet citizens. The vast majority of working America were legally disenfranchised. In those parts of the United States where black labor was dominant, procedural harassments and outright intimidation kept most blacks from voting. Other large blocks of workers, seamen, hobos, and lumberjacks, couldn't register to vote without a fixed address. To place labor's hope on the ballot box seemed to select a field of combat where working class power was weak, instead of concentrating on the point of production where the power was strongest.
Fred Thompson, the industrial workers of the world, took that name to declare its hope that organization could end the use of workers against each other anywhere, in the same plant or in the same industry, or across oceans, in peace or in war, either to cut each other's pay or to kill each other's kids. That is still its aim today. In 1905, North American unions divided workers by their craft. It was a time of extensive immigration, and many trade union locals turned away the newcomers. The IWW wanted to arrange that all workers in the same mill, mine, or factory could bargain as one unit, arranging for support from workers in all industries across the country as one big union, the OBU.
Bring the good old Red Book boys, we'll sing another song. Sing it to the wage slave who has not yet joined the throng of the revolution that will sweep the world along to the one big industrial union.
Hurrah! Hurrah! The truth will make you free. Hurrah! Hurrah! When will you workers see? The only way you'll gain your economic liberty is one big industrial union. You migratory workers of the common labor class, we sing to you to join and be a fighting union man. You must emancipate yourself, you proletarian, with one big industrial union. Hurrah! 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 The truth will make you free. Hurrah! Hurrah! When will you workers see? The only way you'll gain your economic liberty is one big industrial union.
The IWW message was spread through their newspaper, The Industrial Worker, through pamphlets and magazines, and thousands of copies of The Little Red Songbook. Many of these were in foreign languages: Swedish, Finnish, Hungarian, Lithuanian, Russian, Flemish, Yiddish, Italian, and Spanish, published in American cities to meet the needs of the ethnic groups whose members carried red IWW membership cards.
The Wobblies united black and white workers as never before in American history and maintained solidarity and equality regardless of race. Most labor organizations have yet to equal it.
Bill Haywood. In order to have a healthy workers' movement in America, it is necessary to organize the huge mass of Negroes. They must be organized, whatever it costs, and brought into contact with the wide masses of worker immigrants who haven't caught the stupid racial prejudices of native white workers. Meanwhile, education work goes on, aimed at compelling the trade unions to open their doors to Negroes.
Frank Cedarvall. One of the strongest locals was in Philadelphia, where the IWW retained job control on the docks from 1913 to 1924. Approximately half of the peak membership of 4,000 was black, with the remainder composed mainly of Poles, Lithuanians, and Latin Americans from various nations. The major organizer was Ben Fletcher, the most important black leader to emerge in the IWW. And the local chairmanship was rotated monthly between blacks and non-blacks. Just as the welcome mat put out for blacks was crucial to the success on the Philadelphia docks, the full membership offered to Hispanics was key to organizing on the Atlantic Run. Over half of all the firemen on that run were Spanish-speaking.
Utah Phillips. Now most people know some of the IWW songs. We had terrific songwriters like Ralph Chaplin, Richard Brazier, T-Bone Slim, Joe Hill. Their songs are very, very simple. A lot of working folks came from other countries, couldn't speak very much English, and didn't have a chance to go to school there. If songs were going to communicate, they had to be simple. Are you poor, forlorn, and hungry? Are there lots of things you lack? Is your life made up of misery? What do you do? Dump the bosses off your back. Are your clothes all torn and tattered? Are you living in a shack? Would you see your troubles scattered? Dump the bosses off your back. Are you almost split asunder? Are you loaded like a long-eared jack? Boom, why don't you buck like thunder? And dump the bosses off your back. All the agony you suffer, you can end with one good whack. Stiffen up, you ornery duffer, and dump the bosses off your back. Dump the bosses off your back.
Scab. A person who works after a strike has been called and who takes the job of a striking worker. Oscar Ameringer. There's three kinds of scabs, the professional, the amateur, and the union scab. Now, the professional scab is usually a high-paid, high-skilled worker in the employ of strike-breaking and detective agencies. He knows what he is doing, does it well, and for the sake of the long green only. Now, the amateur scab brigade is composed of bums, riffraff, college students, and other undesirable citizens. The amateur scab gets much glory, little pay, and when the strike is over, he's given an honorable discharge in the region where Darwin searched for the missing link. The union scab receives less pay than the professional scab, works better than the amateur scab, and don't know that he is a scab.
Now, the classic union scab was Mr. Block, a block-headed worker whose naive faith in capitalism, church, and state led to one calamity after another. He first appeared in a comic strip created by Ernest Reeve. If you'll kindly pay attention, I'll introduce to you a man that is a credit to the red, white, and blue. His head is made of lumber, as solid as a rock. He is a common worker, and his name is Mr. Block. And Block, he thinks he may be president someday. Hey, hey. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and go jump in the lake. Kindly do that for liberty's sake.
Yes, Mr. Block is lucky. He found a job by G. The shark got $7 for job and fare and fee. They shipped him to a desert and dumped him with his truck. But when he tried to find his job, he sure was out of luck. He shouted, "That's too rough. I'll fix them with the law."
Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake. You take the cake. You make me ache. You make tie a rock on your block. Tie a rock on your block and go jump in the lake. Kindly do that for liberty's sake. Block hiked back to the city, but wasn't doing well. He said, I'll join the union, the great AF of M. He got a job next morning, but was fired in the night. He said, I'll see Sam Gompers and we'll fix that foreman right. Sam Gompers said, you see, you have our sympathy. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. Cake, you take the cake. Ache, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and go jump in the lake. Kindly do that for liberty's sake.
Election day, he shouted, a socialist for mayor. The comrade was elected, Block happy was for fair. But after the election, he got an awful shock when a great big socialistic cop, he wrapped him on his block. And comrade Block did sob. I helped him get his job.
That's right. Oh, Mr. Block, you were born by mistake. You take the cake, you make me ache. Tie a rock on your block and go jump in the lake. Kindly do that for liberty's sake.
Mr. Block was written by Joe Hill, who was a Swede born Joel Emanuel Haglund. Joe came to the United States about 1901 at the age of 19. By 1910, he was an IWW member, active around the port of San Pedro, California. He took part in the San Pedro dock workers' strike, the San Diego Free Speech Campaign, and an abortive revolution in Tijuana, which aimed to make Lower California into a workers' commune. Hill had been a member of the IWW for 3 years, before he was framed on a murder charge in Salt Lake City. He, more than any other writer, had made the IWW a singing movement. He was the author of dozens of wobbly songs which were printed on song cards and published in The Industrial Worker, Solidarity, and in The Little Red Songbook. Joe Hill's songs swept across the country in jails, hobo jungles, union halls, picket lines, and demonstrations.
Many decades after a Utah firing squad ended his life, Joe Hill remains a figure of heated controversy. The cause for which he lived and died, working class emancipation, a free and egalitarian society, still beckons. The class war continues more intensely than ever. And as long as it lasts, people will argue for and against Joe Hill and the principles he courageously upheld to the end. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
In Salt Lake, Joe, by God, says I. Him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I ain't dead.
Says Joe, but I ain't dead.
The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man. Says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die.
And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, Joe says what they could never kill went on to organize.
Went on to organize.
Joe Hill ain't dead, he says to me. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where workers strike and organize, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Irma Lombardi. When the big strike came in Patterson, I was 17. I'd been working for 3 years by then. I was all for it. We thought we were going to change the world. During the strike, a lot of forces were put against us. The morning newspaper was one. The newspaper criticized the strikers and the organizers, especially the organizers. Agitators. A bunch of agitators are in Patterson. That's what they would write. I used to get mad reading it. I said, they aren't agitating us, they're telling us the truth. Organizers don't break laws by helping poor people. Girlie Flynn called a meeting just for the women one day. She started with that lovely way of hers. She looked at us and said, would you like to have nice clothes? We replied, oh yes. Would you like to have nice shoes? Oh, yes, we shouted. Well, you can't have them. Your boss's daughters have those things. We got mad. We knew it was true. We had shoes with holes, and they had lovely things.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving amidst the wonders we have made. But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
You've been listening to Dump the Bosses Off Your Back, 100 Years of the Industrial Workers of the World in Songs and Stories, with Charlie King and Karen Brandow. Part 2 of this concert will be broadcast next week, same time, same station. DC 37 Radio is broadcast Sundays at 8 p.m. and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. over WNYE 91.5 FM. And for more DC 37 news, views, and updates, visit the DC 37 website at www.dc37.net. That's www.dc37.net, where you can also listen to archived DC 37 radio programs. And for DC 37 Radio, this is Ken Nash in solidarity.
It's your city. It's our job. District Council 37 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees has presented a program highlighting the work of the 125,000 men and women of DC 37, members of 56 local unions who work with and for the people of New York City.